Larry or Percy Gaines, reel 7.
Was the discipline in the army in India less strict than it was in England, would you say?
Discipline in India less strict than England. Well, I should say it was less strict in India because you didn't have, in India you were so taken up with everything. You knew your program throughout the day that you didn't have to have Tom, Dick and Harry like we had in England running about checking up. Kind of where you were or what parade, and in England you never knew one way from another which way you were going. You used to be going up through the barracks and you shouldn't be up that part that time of the day. Why aren't you in your own lines? In India there was nothing of that. It was real, to me, you could say home life. You were more locked together. That's what I liked about it. But in England, you didn't know where you were half the time. You walked out the bungalow.
Don't tell me I got that backwards.
Did these soldiers keep pets very much in the barracks?
In India, no. No. The only pet, if they had any at all, would be a dog. We had one. The drums. They had a small black spaniel. Peggy. She was part of the drums, but not everyone had dogs, very seldom. There's only about a couple of dogs in the whole battalion. Because you wouldn't keep them because of the hot weather. But the one of Dinty Moore, Peggy, she was so well looked after, you know, everybody looked after the whole drums. If we were miles away, if we were coming in from training, the old drums beating, you know, in the distance. Peggy'd be about 4 or 5 miles in the camp before we got near it. She'd hear the drums. And she'd be up and away, and you'd just see a trail of dust coming towards you. And it's Peggy tearing along to meet you.
Did you have monkeys about the camp?
Oh, monkeys. You couldn't move for monkeys. It got so bad in one area, that again was Mirit, my first station. So many monkeys around that they put in a complaint, whoever they put the complaint into, and the next day the Indian fella come round with this terrific great ape walking through the cantonment, and as he's walking through the cantonment, all these monkeys were jumping out of trees and that, and following the ape. And apparently, took them all to the monkey temple. Because we thought that was funny. Laugh.
Haven't you got some stories about monkeys? Wasn't there one case?
The monkeys, they're not some. They got marvellous memories. Monkeys, I think, because this particular fellow, he threw a brick or something, I know, at this particular monkey, Sludge, and he broke his leg. Of course, the monkey went off yelping, we didn't see it no more. In about 2 months, nearly 3 months, we were sitting on the veranda. And between the veranda and the toilets, photo of them in there, between the veranda and the toilets is this big bushy tree. And monkeys always used to sit up there all day. And this particular one who threw this brick was sitting out there, and he often used to come out, walk straight across to the toilets, and he used to walk under this tree. One of the chaps told him, he said, you don't want to go under that tree. He said, because one of these days, he said, your friend will be up there, meaning the monkey. and his leg broken. So tough guy, didn't worry. And he went under there the next day. He walked under there, stripped to the waist, and he just going out from under this tree, and all of a sudden, down through the tree came this sludge. He'd recognised him. He jumped on him. Got a bit of luck, and he was so near us that before he had any chance to do any damage, I mean, we got there and chased him off, and he made a tidy old mess, you know, where he bit him than what he would have done if we hadn't been there. But he recognised him, and the one who broke his leg. Oh, and he's walking around this day with scars on him. But monkeys are all right outside. Chaps used to have them for the sole reason of laying under their mosquito net so the old monkey could sit on the back and pick the hair out, you know, looking for scurf, I suppose. We used to think he was looking for fleas. And they used to go off to sleep with the blooming thing sitting on their neck doing that. But that was the only thing we had with monkeys.
So the monkeys used to preen the men's hair?
Yeah.
Heads, scalps.
Yeah. Well, you like to see a monkey jump on another monkey's back and he's picking away at his head. They used to sit for hours like that.
Eating the scalp?
Yeah. And of course, all this scratching about used to put the bloke all to sleep, you know. Oh, dear.
Wasn't there an incident that you told me about where a chap put a monkey on the fan?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, that was... this old Zach, a bass drummer, he had this monkey and apparently done its business on his pillow, on his bed. And he said, I'll teach you a lesson. And he tied the rope on the end of this bunker, this wing, this propeller. And he went over to the control box on the wall, turned it and went slow. And the monkey was thoroughly enjoying it, you know, jumping up on the propeller and having to ride round. And he suddenly switched it quick, and the poor old monkey shot out in the air and it was going round and round. Eventually let him down, and he was like a... As he hit the floor, he would just spark out, you know. And he kept trying to get up like a little old man, had too much to drink. And the lads, they were all round in a circle, rolling up. You'd get up, you know, and as he tried to stand up, he's swaying and his two hands were holding his head. Just like a human being was saying, oh, God, no more of that, you know. Down he'd fall again. In the end, you felt sorry for the poor little devil.
What was the story about a bear which you were going to tell me?
Oh, well, that was up at Check. I was bugler again, and it was when the snow was about. We had a bit of snow that year. And I came out at 6 o'clock to Sandry Valley. And I thought to myself, well, this morning, because you could choose yourself what kind of reveille, whether you blow long reveille or short reveille. And I was in the mood that morning. So I felt real brisky, just had a nice cup of hot tea, you know, and I came out. So I sang long reveille this morning. Because you Sandry Valley from here, this guard room, up to the companies on the first brow, and there's a bugler up there, picks it up, and he sounds it to the next layer of companies on the next hill. And I stood there, just going to start sounding off the valley, and I saw this movement to the left. Mind you, it's down some steps from the guard room, then you go onto the square. And it's quite a way over the square, and I saw this movement. I just started reveille, so I couldn't stop. And this damn thing come up over the edge of this cut, and it was this Himalayan bear. And I was blowing long reveille, I was like, why do I have to pick long reveille? And it come right over to the middle of the pitch. And I got halfway through reveille, and it was sitting up on its haunches, you know, and it was swaying. To this blooming reveille I was blowing, it was swaying with it. And then it came forward a bit more, and it started swaying again. And I could hear the lads back in the guard room there rolling up. And I finished with Valley because I was tough. I was up six steps, miles away from the square. I said, well, the guard room behind me, I'd be in there first before he could get up there, you know. And I stood there and just stopped swaying, you know, looked round in disgust, back across the square and vanished over the side.
How big was it?
Oh, tremendous size. Well, when he sat up, I reckon if I could have walked up to it, I'd have had to look up like that at it. Terrific size. The way it was swaying there to the music, you know. And the blokes were laughing their heads off back in the billet in the garden. But I don't know.
Did any organisations like the Salvation Army provide any facilities for the troops?
What, in India?
Hmm.
No. No, we didn't have any. Anything like that, not to do with the organisations of kind of Salvation Army.
You were telling me about sport, how you kept fit playing sport and the various games you played, like football and hockey and so on. Were there any games which you played in India which you'd never played in England, especially Indian games? Didn't you tell me you played polo?
That wasn't, when you say polo, you don't mean, I don't mean like polo you see here, you know, Windsor Great Park polo stuff. No, this was more of, I was talking about these tats, these horses, and after a while we mastered them and knew how to ride and whatnot. And we had this battalion polo on the football pitch, six a side. It was a football bladder and hockey sticks. And six of you. And that's when you realise you were becoming quite a good horseman. You only had one hand with the horse, you know, and the hockey stick. We used to charge up this field and where other chaps on there, so had a job to make the thing trot, let alone charge. And of course, we were laughing. And I always remember my mate going for the goal. Nobody around him. Open goal. And he got about, well, he got about 10 yards from the goal, and up come his hockey stick. And he was just going to swoop down to belt the ball through the goal mouth. The old horse decided to put on its four-wheel brakes, you know, and it pulled up with a jolt. And my mate went through the goal, but the ball didn't. And that was the laugh we used to have with that. You know, we could take out any sport or go out riding. See, that's what I liked about India. You wouldn't do a thing like that in this country. Only officers had their charges, but out there we were able to do it. Same as when we went to Kashmir, we galloped up the hills, you know. Oh, it's a real taste of good life.
Was this a holiday which you had in Kashmir?
Mm. Yeah, I had a fortnight, fortnight's holiday up there. We've got photos in there. Used to cruise up the river at night and pull in on the side to various hotels, smashing, have a drink, and then back to the hotel again.
You stayed in a hotel, did you?
Mm. Not in the hotel itself, that was full, but in the grounds of the hotel we had these marquees, big marquees, you know. And I always remember this because Flash Basket, our clarinet player from the band, him and I went up with these two nursemaids. English, not Indian. The adjutant's nursemaid and another officer's nursemaid. They went up before us. When we got up there, they had a kind of big square marquee like ours, next to ours, so both together. So we had a grand fortnight. Don't ask me any more.
Did you see them again?
What, when we went back?
These girls?
Back to the depot, back to the radio. Oh, yes, we went back together. Went down there. As a matter of fact, there was a cud slide on the way back. Do you ever see any of those?
No.
You get up these mountains, you get a slide, you know, blocks the road. But the old bus got over it, I have a photo of it in there.
Like a landslide.
Mm. And we had to wait while it was levelled out, you know, so the bus could go over. But apart from that, but it's a glorious sight, I think, if you haven't been to Cashin. You've got to go up there to see it. And I got photos there of the boats, of the hotel, actually, of the tent. And what we took these photos, you know, on the what they called the shikari. That's the boats. We used to sit on those, kind of big coloured mattress thing, squat on that. And the coolie behind the curtains, you know, pumping away there. And the gramophone playing. We used to have photos taken of all this. I haven't got any now. I haven't got one left. I came home and got married, looked through our photos, and the missus said, oh, well, you don't want that, do you? You don't want that, do you? And they're all tore up. And I was tearing her fancy blokes up. Pity, really, now when you look back. Some good snaps there. Of course, well, me one or two was, I mean, you were sitting, laying back on the old shikari there, it was a bit much, wasn't it, for your wife? But you didn't think of it like that out there. You really enjoyed, you know, you'd been down upriver in the moonlight, the old gramophone, one of them lined up with the handle, playing away. I don't know.
On the camps, were there married quarters? Were there married quarters on any of the camps you were at? For any of the troops?
Well, when you say camps, you mean...
The cantonments?
The barracks.
Mm.
Oh, yes, you had the married quarters at, like, Mirret, at their own block. Married quarters. Because the quarters in Mirret, the history goes, I didn't actually witness or see anything, but the story is the Indian Mutiny... The married quarters, when they came out, when the Yolande were called out of the church, and they raced back to the cantonment, the story goes that the married quarters, the doors, were all smothered in blood, where these mutineers carved up the women and kids, you know, during the Indian Mutiny. Because I never see anything, not eyewitness. They're supposed to still be there or something, but as far as I'm concerned. I didn't know, as a matter of fact, I didn't see any, but I don't know where they were in Merritt. But they were there, married quarters. And that's as the story goes. And we had, everywhere you went, the woman went with their husbands in India, except Northwest Frontier. Now, we didn't have any woman there. But they were up at Sherat. That takes about an hour, 2 hours by bus from Landikotal through Peshawar up to Sherat. They were nearest they could get, and the Passion Wagon used to go up about once a week.
What's the Passion Wagon?
Well, that was the bus belonging to the regiment, kind of small coach, 12-seater. And, of course, the married pairs, the husbands, used to go up weekends to see their wives, hence the Passion Wagon. That's why they called the coach the Passion Wagon. We went up in it when the band went up to play at Christmas Do. I had Christmas on the Northwest Frontier, 37, my last Christmas. Went up to the Northwest Frontier, played for a dance and a concert party, came back, kit together, sorting out one thing and another. Before we knew where we were, March was here. And strange enough, we were on our way from Landikotal to Karachi. We got to Karachi, where I'd left 7.5 years ago. And there, still standing in the dock, was a troop ship, Dorsetshire, the one we came over on. 7.5 years, and yet we looked at that as if we hadn't left Karachi. You know, it was uncanny. The area hadn't altered at all. There was no improvement. It was still the same, Quayside. And the troop ship we just marched off of in 1930, it was still there, 7.5 years out. Naturally, it'd been backwards and forwards, but to us, it didn't seem that we'd been inland all over India for 7.5 years and come back and got on the boat again. We just couldn't believe it. And we sailed for Dover.
Did the families of the married men fit in well with the life in the cantonment?
Well, the only time we met the families was at any particular function, like a dance, you know, if you give a dance, a NCO's dance or any particular dance. But with us, we did meet them quite a lot in the band, because we were playing at different functions. But as regards the company men, they didn't see much of them, only when they were out at the bazaars shopping or something like that.
But were there any instances of misbehaviour between any of the married women and the other men on the camps?
No, I don't. Not as far as I'm concerned. I can't remember. No, I'll say that. There was a lot of understanding between the woman, you know, the married woman, and the company itself, the regiment. I mean, they were respected by all ranks. And they used to do a lot for the troops. Like, you take us with dance band. Well, whenever I got a function up, we were running a dance or a do. I only had to say the word, oh, we're playing at so-and-so, but what are we going to do about refreshments? The married woman would get together, cook up cakes and what have you, and they'd lay on the refreshments for the do. That was the atmosphere, you know, between families and that. You knew them all by their Christian name, and their husbands didn't mind. I mean, they knew. That was the kind of trust there was amongst you. The husbands knew that the wives were going out. The wife might say, and Mrs. Marshall, she might say, oh, Larry's popping over tonight. I want him to take so-and-so, so-and-so. Oh, that's all right. I'm going up and mess for a game of billiards. Yeah, go off and play billiards, knowing I'm coming to his quarters. But he didn't worry, nor did I. See, there wasn't that, well, I suppose there were, the odd bod, I don't know, but we never had any trouble with them. We had some good times out there.